From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on August 21st, 2024, from the Windy City of Chicago. We're right downtown at the Hyatt Regency. That's right, folks, in a better lobby today, quieter. On this episode of The Lead, it's the Democratic National Convention, day three. We are almost there, folks, and we bring you some of the biggest speeches from night two at the DNC, including remarks from both Michelle and Barack Obama. They brought the house down in their hometown of Chicago. We also have an exclusive interview with Congressman Jim Clyburn about Democratic momentum, Vice President Kamala Harris leading the party, and her running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who speaks tonight. We also hear from Maryland Governor Wes Moore, who fired up South Carolina Democrats this morning. It is fiery, folks. Now, we do not have a wind-down section. We've told you this before. Stop calling. Actually, no, keep calling. 803-563-7169. We need to hear your voices. We're hearing from a lot of these Democratic bigwigs. We want to hear from you. I'm not going to say little people because you're not. You're big to us. 803-563-7169. All right, folks, the Democratic National Convention Party continues to roll on. It's day three. We're almost there. But first, I need to give you some of the hits from day two since we last spoke. The convention kicked off with the hypest roll call we've seen in a while. DJ Cassidy was spinning up the hits by each state's top performing artist, if they had one. So you got your Bruce Springsteen from Jersey.
How you doing?
Your Michael Jackson from Indiana. Prince from Minnesota. Lil Jon for Georgia. Talk about hype. And in South Carolina, that means the godfather of soul, James Brown.
I want to get into it, man, you know. Yeah. Can I count it off? One, two, three, four.
Yes, the honorary roll call was incredibly hype, and South Carolina Democratic Party Chairwoman Crystal Spain and State Senator Margie Bright Matthews spoke. Take a listen.
I'm Crystal Spain, chair of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Basketball champions, the mighty Lady Gamecocks.
I'm Senator Margie Bright Matthews, one of the sister senators in John F. Kennedy Profiles in Courage Award winner. We stopped the total abortion ban in South Carolina. Like us, Kamala has proven that she has the courage to fight. And will fight for all Americans. South Carolina is not going back. We're going forward, forward on reproductive rights. We're going forward on voting rights. We're going forward against hate crimes. Forward with a prosecutor and not a crook. Proud to cast our 65 delegates for Kamala Harris.
Yes, that was them there committing all 65 delegates to Kamala Harris, or as they call her, the next president of the United States. And again, that was honorary because this has already been done virtually weeks ago. But as we continue on day two, Vice President Kamala Harris did say hi to the convention in Chicago through some incredible live production work from the Fiserv Arena in Milwaukee.
Actually, it's pronounced Milwaukee.
Yes, that Fiserv Arena, where the RNC was, where we were a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
So just to point out, the Dems did a little double dip there, selling out two major arenas, both the RNC and the DNC, if you will, with tens of thousands of voters. And again, that was a real live audience there that she was speaking before in Chicago, not AI, not fake. You know, people are real. I don't know what else to say here. But we did see her, again, like we were saying, campaigning in that critical swing state of Wisconsin. They're not taking any time off. And then the vice president got back here to Chicago. In fact, per the pool report, she waited to land Air Force Two just so she could finish watching her husband, Doug Emhoff's speech, which was his way of really introducing himself to folks, telling anecdotes, and really personalizing the vice president and their family. It indeed was a night of spouses, because after Doug wrapped up, former First Lady Michelle Obama took the stage and gave the convention hall a massive shot of energy. People were losing it. She referenced the magical nature of this campaign and this moment, and she's done pulling punches, with Michelle directly and indirectly targeting former President Donald Trump at times.
I want to know, who's going to tell him that the job he's currently seeking might just be one of those black jobs? Misogynistic, racist lies as a substitute for real ideas and solutions that will actually make people's lives better. Look, because cutting our health care, taking away our freedom to control our bodies, the freedom to become a mother through IVF like I did, those things are not going to improve the health outcomes of our wives, mothers, and daughters. Shutting down the Department of Education, banning our books, none of that will prepare our kids for the future. Demonizing our children for being who they are and loving who they love, look, that doesn't make anybody's life better. Kamala has shown her allegiance to this nation, not by spewing anger and bitterness, but by living a life of service and always pushing the doors of opportunity open to others, she understands that most of us will never be afforded the grace of failing forward. We will never benefit from the affirmative action of generational wealth. If we bankrupt a business or choke in a crisis, we don't get a second, third, or fourth chance. If things don't go our way, we don't have the luxury of whining or cheating others to get further ahead. No. We don't get to change the rules so we always win. If we see a mountain in front of us, we don't expect there to be an escalator waiting to take us to the top. No.
So much for going high when they go low. That's right. You can hear the Democrats readjusting that on the fly. It's not 2016 anymore, folks. It's 2024. So you heard some digs right there. But Michelle also spoke of her late mother, her values, and her determination to help others rise up. Michelle said that she sees such values in Kamala as well and sought to dispel any anxieties around Harris while making a not-so-subtle plea to unenthusiastic voters.
So no matter how good we feel tonight or tomorrow or the next day, this is going to be an uphill battle. So folks, we cannot be our own worst enemies. No. See, because the minute something goes wrong, the minute a lie takes hold, folks, we cannot start wringing our hands. We cannot get a Goldilocks complex about whether everything is just right. And we cannot indulge our anxieties about whether this country will elect someone like Kamala, instead of doing everything we can to get someone like Kamala elected. So, we cannot afford for anyone America to sit on their hands and wait to be called. Don't complain if no one from the campaign has specifically reached out to you to ask you for your support. There is simply no time for that kind of foolishness. You know what you need to do. So, Consider this to be your official ask. Michelle Obama is asking you, no, I'm telling y'all, to do something.
And like we said, the applause never stopped for Michelle Obama. Every sentence was punctuated by it, by people and a party that has been thirsty for that Obama-era magic that is undoubtedly back. That's based on the energy that we're feeling out here and comments from everyone you speak with. Several people have been asking us how this stacks up to the Republican National Convention, to which I say, different energies, different vibes, especially when you have these titans of the Democratic Party rallying folks at the biggest political pep rally. That wasn't exactly the case in Milwaukee, where some of the big speakers were fellow Trump family members. You didn't have the Michelle or Barack Obamas, who Michelle introduced following her speech. The 44th President of the United States, Barack Obama, who admitted that Michelle is one tough act to follow, gave it his best. In fact, he leaned into Kamala Harris's candidacy. And he helped also transition from President Joe Biden's swan song Monday night into this ramp up of Harris's speech that's on tap for Thursday. And he spoke to those evaporating undercurrents of whether she is prepared to win the highest office in America that Obama said she is ready for.
We do not need four more years of bluster and bumbling and chaos. We have seen that movie before, and we all know that the sequel is usually worse. America's ready for a new chapter. America's ready for a better story. We are ready for a President Kamala Harris. And Kamala Harris is ready for the job. This is a person who has spent her life fighting on behalf of people who need a voice and a champion. As you heard from Michelle, Kamala was not born into privilege. She had to work for what she's got. And she actually cares about what other people are going through.
Obama also went in on Trump, calling out his obsession with crowd sizes, a bit of an innuendo there if you watch his eyes and his hand movements, and the tactics that he says Republicans employ to divide the country.
Here's a 78-year-old billionaire who has not stopped whining about his problems since he rode down his golden escalator 9 years ago. It has been a constant stream of gripes and grievances that's actually been getting worse now that he's afraid of losing to Kamala. There's the childish nicknames, the crazy conspiracy theories, this weird obsession with crowd sizes. It just goes on and on and on. The other day I heard someone compare Trump to the neighbor who keeps running his leaf blower outside your window every minute of every day. We live in a time of such confusion and rancor, with a culture that puts a premium on things that don't last. Money, fame, status, likes. We chase the approval of strangers on our phones. We build all manner of walls and fences around ourselves, and then we wonder why we feel so alone. We don't trust each other as much because we don't take the time to know each other. And in that space between us, politicians and algorithms teach us to caricature each other and troll each other and fear each other. But here's the good news, Chicago. All across America, in big cities and small towns, away from all the noise, the ties that bind us together are still there. We still coach Little League and look out for our elderly neighbors. We still feed the hungry in churches and mosques and synagogues and temples. We share the same pride when our Olympic athletes compete for the gold. Because the vast majority of us do not want to live in a country that's bitter and divided. We want something better. We want to be better. And the joy and the excitement that we're seeing around this campaign tells us we're not alone.
That was there, the former President Barack Obama. And I told you yesterday about my sit down with the storied 6th District Congressman Jim Clyburn. And we caught up with him to talk about the history of the past month, his big political calls that have paid off, as well as his thoughts on the Harris-Walz ticket and much more. I started off by asking him about the energy that we're seeing.
Well, there is a lot of energy, and it's been that way for the last couple of weeks. But what we have to be very careful of, that energy is a great thing to have. But for it to be effective, it must be harnessed, and it must be targeted. And this energy that's floating around there, we've got to put the organization in place to harness that energy, and we've got to have implementation of this campaign that will target it to be effective on election day.
Sir, what's it been like this past 4 weeks? You're a historian. You love your history. It's been a kind of a wild past month for not only the Democratic Party, but America in general. How do you sum up the past 4 weeks?
Well, you know, I study history almost daily, and I say to people all the time, the reason people seem to feel that these are unusual times is that they don't spend a lot of time studying our history. The history of the country is replete with these kinds of challenges along the way. In fact, I was never surprised at what was happening on January 6, 2021, because it's exactly what happened in 1876, the only time we've ever had the election thrown into the House of Representatives. And South Carolina played a critical role back in 1876, and so I was well prepared for that. So when I talk to people, I say to them, just remember, we don't want to repeat some of our history. We want to build on it. We want to continue our trek toward a more perfect union. But we should not respond to that dark past by going back to it.
Congressman, when we talk about that history, we talk about big moves that folks have done over the years. Tell me about Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, his decision not to run for that second term. How monumental do you think that decision was?
It is a very monumental move because it bodes out something that Martin Luther King Jr. Said to us in one of his speeches. It does not matter how long you live, but how well you live. And I have said to Joe Biden, it does not matter how long you serve, it's how well you serve. To serve two terms and leave mediocre is not as good as serving one term and bringing this country back from the brink, setting it on course to perfection, and that's what he's done. And that is bookended by having been vice president to the first African-American president of this country and picking as your vice president the first woman vice president, and then handed it off and endorsing what could very well be the first woman president. Nobody else will have a record as effective as his has been.
I was going to say, you kind of led into that question, but what would that mean for his legacy, for this country, should that be the case come November?
Absolutely, it would mean everything, and it would put him at a very unique place in history. And then you just look at the substance of those 4 years. Look at his legislation. How many people have passed the kind of bipartisan legislation that he has passed? How many people have broken the mold and put the first black woman on the Supreme Court? They appointed more black women to courts of appeal than all other presidents combined. He has a record that is unrivaled. And I don't think anybody will measure up to that for a long, long time.
So we're just talking about the president there and his legacy, what we're going to see in the future from it. Tell me about the vice president, what you've seen from her, how she has grown over these past few years, and how you see her in this campaign, facing off against President Donald Trump some less than 80 days away from Election Day.
Well, you know, I was following her before she became the Attorney General of California. I knew about her record. I watched her campaign for the United States Senate In fact, I was out in California for a weekend doing that campaign, and I saw great possibilities in her. And I knew that if given the opportunity, that she would rise to the occasion. And when, as vice president, that incident occurred down in Tennessee, nobody has ever seen a state legislature react and act the way those people did to those two young African-American men and the one white woman. She got on the plane and she went down there. And the speech she gave in defense of them told me she had arrived. And then she responded to the Dobbs decision, going all over this country. And I saw how she was harnessing women. I said to all of my friends, if Joe Biden decides not to run, we got to go all in for Kamala Harris. Now, a lot of people were telling me that I didn't know what I was talking about. But since I've been here, I've had more people coming up to me and saying, I question your wisdom, but not anymore.
Why do they still question you?
I don't know. After 2020, a bunch of them jumped on me before that endorsement. And I had one to say to me, sitting right there in South Carolina, you endorsed Joe Biden, and you are going to be toast. Well, I may be toast, but it's a good, delicious brown toast.
So we're just wrapping up a little bit too. You know, you're just talking about folks and their support for Harris and how you wanted to get behind her too. What are your daughters saying? You always talk about your daughters and how
I
they feel about
things. I do talk about them.
Now, what are their thoughts on this?
Well, you know, before I came to a final decision as to what to do in this instance, I was with my daughters. In fact, it happened to have been my birthday. I tell everybody that Joe Biden called me with his decision on the 45th anniversary of my 39th birthday. On July 21st, I turned 84 years old. I was sitting down, getting ready to have dinner with two of my daughters, with the other one on the phone. And I told them that I had just gotten a call from Joe Biden. He had just read me his statement. He's getting out of the race. And should I go all in, as I want to do for Kamala? And my two youngest daughters who I was eating with are Deltas. And they are saying, we got to go with the AKA on this one. And so we went all in. I called my friends, who I called my kitchen cabinet, right at the time that Joe Biden put out his statement. And I told them what my feelings were and asked them what were theirs. They were all for going all in with her.
And so, sir, tell me about her pick for her running mate with Tim Walz, the governor from Minnesota. What do you think about that decision and also how that's going to position them come November when we look at these big swing states?
He's a great guy, a very unique guy. When he first ran for Congress, he called me and invited me to his district. I said, me coming to Minnesota? And remember, this is November, man, it was cold, snowing. But I went out there, spent 2 days with him and his wife, went to that little town that he's born in. We went to the Mayo Clinic and had a town hall meeting there. I went around to small groups of farmers with him, and there was something about him that was just very unique. And then when he got elected in the district he was not supposed to get elected in, we lost a seat. We thought we were going to win in Minnesota, but we picked his up. And when he got to Congress, I got to know him, and we became real good friends. And so when the vice president called me to ask me about the three or four people that she was boiling it down to, I was able to give him a glowing recommendation. Now, everybody knew I was for the guy up there in North Carolina. I wanted Cooper, but then Cooper took himself out. Josh Shapiro and Timothy Walz were the two people that discuss with her.
And, sir, just kind of wrapping up, I know you have things to do, but I want to ask you just about how his message is breaking through, it seems like, to a lot of those swing voters. He's, you know, he's talking about weird, being the Republicans having this weirdness about them.
Sure.
Is this something that is going to carry on through when it comes to breaking through into swing voters?
I think so. There's a lot of substance to him. But we live in a society where style means a lot. And a lot of people will not get to the substance if they can't accommodate the style. He has a style about him that has a certain amount of warmth and invitedness in it, and people feel drawn to him. So when he got to that word weird, I think that word stuck because it was coming from him. I could have said the same thing, and I don't think it would have gotten any traction. But when Tim said it, the way he said it, the style, it stuck. And I think that's going to happen throughout this campaign.
Again, that was 6th District Congressman Jim Clyburn there, the top Democrat in the state. Now today, let's talk about what's on tap for the third day. The delegation is still keeping it hype. There are still people making it to the breakfast to hear from some of the top Democratic leaders in the party. Again, the speaker lineup here for the Dems has been pretty remarkable. But like you heard from folks in Tuesday's pod, it is not lost on them how important South Carolina is when it comes to the primaries in selecting the nominee. That's because South Carolina will always go solidly for a Republican when it comes to being statewide. Nevertheless, Southern Democrats are still getting hype, and Maryland Governor Wes Moore did just that this morning.
We got 76 days in a wake-up, y'all, till Election Day. 76 days in a wake up to go out there and make sure that it matters. 76 days in a wake up to make sure that we do what I learned when I was 17 years old when I first joined the Army, that we leave no one behind. 76 days in a wake up to knock on every door, to make every phone call, to call all of our friends and family, la-di-da-di, everybody, and get them all on board. Because here's what I know. When we needed it most, the vice president was with us every step of the way. Well, I want to be clear. For the next 76 days in a wake up, we will be with her every step of the way. We are going to win in November. We're going to earn it in November. We are going to send a message that those who came before us will hear. We're going to send a message that those who come after us will hear, that we took this moment seriously, that we stayed on our post, that we understood the assignment, and that we left no one behind, and we will have a Vice President Kamala Harris becoming the 47th President of the United States of America. God bless you guys, and let's go earn this win.
Moore is a rising star in the Democratic Party and has served in the Army with the 82nd Airborne in Afghanistan. So keep an eye on Wes Moore from Maryland. The delegation also heard from the mayor of Chicago, as well as Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, who addressed the convention hall Tuesday evening, even making some billionaire-level digs against Trump, which he did again before the delegation. And he can do that because his family, which immigrated from Ukraine years and decades and generations ago, went on to found and own the Hyatt hotel chain. I'm at a Hyatt right now, full disclosure, which was later largely sold to Berkshire Hathaway. The family also had an industrial holding company. And needless to say, they're billionaires because the family's major holdings were divided among the descendants to the tune of around $1.4 billion each. Governor Pritzker is currently worth $3.5 billion per Forbes. So you know that classic billionaire and billionaire action that everyone's always lusting over. But what's on tap today? We're done talking about billionaires, right? The convention does gavel in at 6:30 East Coast time and will gavel out around 11 p.m. ideally. Hopefully, we'll see. So far, so good. You can always watch that coverage on the PBS NewsHour on SCTV channels statewide. And the keynote addresses tonight will come from Harris's running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who will be introducing himself in many ways in prime time. The two-term governor's big speech will no doubt be fiery, energetic, and full of zingers. Unlike Tuesday, both he and Harris are in Chicago all day today. Now, Governor Walz will also need to use this massive platform to get on the radar of swing and independent voters who may have not heard of him before, but are critical in swing states. We'll also hear from House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries and the former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Former President Bill Clinton and Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg will also be speaking from the convention stage. You can find out more about that again by watching the PBS NewsHour and sticking with us for our coverage from SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. You can always hear my own Schechter's updates on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And of course, our podcast, The South Carolina Lead, which is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Is it Moy Caliente, Black
Pepper?
If
we had to come up with a name for this one, we could have called it Wes is More.
Oh, I get it.
Wes is More. Wes.
No,
it's his
know.
Name.
I'm getting it.
Wes is More.
You know, you're clever. I see why Caitlin married you.